There is a tree that can drop 1,000 pounds of food in a single season. Its flour outperforms wheat on nearly every nutritional measure, with 5 to 7 times more fiber and 5 to 8 times more healthy fat. It has a glycemic index of 25, compared to wheat 70. 3 independent laboratories confirmed its oil contains 5 to 6 times more vitamin E than olive oil. It is naturally gluten-free. It requires no irrigation, no fertilizer, no pesticides. The raw material costs nothing. It falls off the tree. Americans spend $3.5 billion a year on gluten-free flour alternatives. They spend $60 billion on lawn care that includes sweeping this food into the trash. Corn receives $3.2 billion in annual subsidies. This tree receives zero. The USDA made only one significant investment in the forests that produce it, $60 million. And that investment was terminated in April 2025. Korea consumes 14,000 metric tons of it every year as everyday food. America rakes it to the curb. This is the acorn, the oldest free bread on Earth, and the only one we pay to throw away. Welcome to Buried Garden. The archive opens in 1997 on the banks of the Jordan River in northern Israel. Archaeologist Nama Goren Inbar of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem was leading excavations at Gesher Benot Yaakov, an Acheulean site in the northern Jordan Valley that had been occupied for roughly 100,000 continuous years. She was digging through layers associated with Homo erectus, not modern humans, not even Neanderthals, a species that predated our own by 500,000 years. She expected stone tools. She expected animal bones. What she found was something far more specific. Scattered through the sediment were the preserved remains of Mont Tabor oak acorns, Quercus ithaburensis, alongside pitted stone hammers and anvils shaped for a single purpose, cracking. These were not stones that happened to be nearby. They were tools engineered for nut processing. And the acorns were not incidental scatter. They were concentrated, collected, stored. The carbon dating came back, 750,000 years before present. She published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The implications were staggering. This was the earliest known evidence of acorn consumption on Earth, and it was not performed by our species. It was performed by a predecessor who had been eating acorns for longer than Homo sapiens has existed. Picture the acorn itself. Crack the shell, light tan to dark reddish-brown depending on the species, and inside you find ivory-colored meat wrapped in a thin, papery skin. The texture is firm, slightly waxy. The smell is mild, faintly nutty, like damp wood and autumn soil. It looks like food. It has always looked like food. 750,000 years. That is not a folk tradition. That is not a fad. That is a relationship between a species and a tree older than language, older than controlled fire, older than Homo sapiens itself. And they never stopped. Kibera Cave in Israel, 60,000 years ago. Neanderthals eating acorns. Grotta Paglici in southern Italy, 32,600 years ago. Archaeologists Marta Mariotti Lippi of the University of Florence and Anna Revidin found acorn starch on a stone pestle grinder, the earliest evidence of acorn processing in Europe. The finding was published in PNAS, and it showed signs of thermal pretreatment. They were heating acorns before grinding them, refining technique, and improving yield. Tafaralt Caves in Morocco, 14,000 years ago. Acorn remains were found in such quantities that archaeologists concluded they were year-round staples, not seasonal supplements. 51% of adult teeth at the site showed caries, a rate comparable to early agricultural societies, attributed to the heavy starch content of their acorn-dominant diet. These were not desperate people eating famine food. These were civilizations built on a tree. The most fully documented acorn civilization in the modern record grew in California. Anthropologist Alfred L. Kroeber of the University of California, Berkeley, estimated that acorns were the primary food for more than 75% of native Californians. The pre-contact population exceeded 300,000, one of the densest indigenous populations anywhere north of Mexico. They achieved this without agriculture. No plowed fields, no irrigation canals, no annual planting cycles. The forest was the farm. The Miwok, Pomo, Yokuts, Karuk, Hupa, Maidu, Wintu, Ohlone, Chumash, Yurok, Kumeyaay, Kahuilla, Mono and Paiute, among dozens of other nations, all built their food systems around the oak. They called the prepared food Weewish or Shawai, though the names varied as widely as the peoples who spoke them. A typical Yokuts family consumed 1,000 to 2,000 pounds of acorns per year. A family of five needed over a ton annually. The oak provided it. The preparation was not simple. It was engineering. Women gathered fallen acorns each autumn and dried them, sometimes for an entire year. They cracked the shells with handheld stone pestles and pounded the meat in bedrock mortars carved into granite outcrops, working until the meal was so fine it would stick to a basket sifter held upside down. Then came leaching, the critical step. Raw acorns are violently bitter. Tannins bind to proteins on the tongue like an astringent vice, drying the mouth and puckering the throat. It is like drinking the most tannic red wine you have ever tasted, multiplied tenfold. You cannot eat them. Your body rejects them. So these nations built filtration systems. They dug shallow pits, lined them with sand, laid non-toxic leaves across the surface, spread the ground meal on top, and poured water through. The tannins drained with the water. The leaves kept the sand from contaminating the flour. Other tribes placed baskets of ground acorns directly into clean, fast-flowing streams and let the current do the work. After leaching, the meal tasted mild, nutty, faintly sweet, like hazelnuts crossed with chestnuts. They cooked it by dropping fire-heated stones into watertight baskets, stirring constantly with carved acorn mush paddles. The result was soup, porridge, biscuits, and bread, stored in raised granaries called chuk-ah. These grapevine and buckbrush containers stood on stumps, were lined with wormwood to repel insects, and were shingled with conifer boughs against rain. Unshelled acorns lasted up to 10 years. 8 miles east of Jackson, California, there is a place called Chaze, Indian Grinding Rock State Historic Park. 1,185 bedrock mortars are carved into a single limestone outcrop there, the largest collection in North America. Alongside them, 363 petroglyphs date 2 to 3,000 years. This is not oral history. This is the record carved in stone. A forest is not wilderness. A forest is infrastructure. Half a world away, Korea proved it. In Korea, acorns never stopped being food. They did not need to be rediscovered. They simply never left. The nation consumes 14,000 metric tons of acorns every year. Dotorimuki, acorn jelly, is made by cooking acorn starch with water into porridge, cooling it until firm, slicing it into blocks, and serving it dressed with spicy soy sauce and sesame oil. It is available in every Korean supermarket, every traditional market. At dedicated muk alleys like Daejeon's Gujuk district, the tradition became nationally famous after Expo 1993. Multiple restaurants across the country serve nothing but acorn dishes, noodles, pancakes, dumplings, cold soups, even acorn liquor. The origin legend traces to the Japanese invasions of 1592 to 1598. King Seonjo fled north. Villagers, facing famine, made dotorimuk for the king from the only abundant food they had. When he returned to the palace, he kept eating it, not as poverty food, but as remembrance. Korea is the proof. Acorn food culture at industrial scale is not theoretical. It is Tuesday. And the ancient Mediterranean confirmed what California and Korea already knew. Pliny the Elder, writing in the first century, declared that acorns at this very day constitute the wealth of many races. He cataloged 13 varieties. He noted that the 12 tables of Roman law, the legal foundation of the Republic, explicitly permitted citizens to gather acorns that fell onto another person's land. Acorn access was codified in law. This was not primitive subsistence. This was policy. Strabo recorded that the Lusitanian mountaineers of Iberia fed on acorns for two-thirds of the year, making bread that may be stored up for a long period. In Spain, acorns rank third in frequency of archaeobotanical remains at proto-historic sites, more frequent than legumes. Acorn bread was still eaten during the Spanish Civil War of 1936 to 1939. The ancient world knew this food sustained civilizations. Modern researchers discovered why. In 2003, a team at CBES CSIE in Murcia, Spain, led by researchers Cantos, Espin, and Lopez Bote, published findings in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry that should have rewritten how we think about nuts. They identified 32 phenolic compounds in acorns. Every single one was a gallic acid derivative. No other common nut or grain on Earth shares this chemical fingerprint. It was entirely unique. Then came the oil. Three independent research groups, Charef in 2008, Ozken in 2008, and Makhlouf in 2018, measured the tocopherol content of acorn oil. Tocopherols are vitamin E. They are among the most potent fat-soluble antioxidants known. Olive oil, the gold standard, contains 100 to 300 milligrams per kilogram. The researchers measured acorn oil at 1,440 to 1,783 milligrams per kilogram. That is 5 to 6 times more vitamin E than olive oil. Three labs, three countries, same result. The glycemic index defied classification. Acorn flour, a starchy food ground from a nut that grows on a tree, registered a glycemic index of roughly 25. White wheat flour registered 70. White rice registered 73. Corn flour registered 69. Despite being a carbohydrate-rich food, acorn flour behaves in the bloodstream like a legume, not a grain. Here is what that means in your body. When you eat white bread, your blood sugar spikes 0 to 60 in seconds, like a car accelerating off a line. Insulin floods the system to compensate. Then the crash, the fatigue, the hunger that comes back an hour later. The cycle repeats, meal after meal, year after year. Acorn flour enters differently. The fiber, 9 to 15%, up to 5 times more than white wheat flour, and the monounsaturated fats slow everything down. No spike, no crash. A steady current instead of a flood. Your body processes it the way it was designed to process food. In 2023, Sasani and colleagues at Shiraz University of Medical Sciences in Iran ran the first clinical trial. They found that acorn polyphenols inhibit three diabetes-related enzymes simultaneously: alpha amylase, alpha glucosidase, and DPPIV. A triple mechanism in a single food source. That is rare. Patients eating muffins containing just 10 grams of acorn flour daily for 8 weeks showed improvements in hemoglobin A1C, HDL cholesterol, and triglycerides, with significantly greater satiety. They felt fuller, longer. Then Yan and colleagues in 2016 found something even the researchers did not expect. Acorn shell extracts completely suppress the formation of new fat cells in laboratory cultures, more effectively than quercetin, a gold standard anti-obesity compound. The acorn outperformed the benchmark, 5 to 8 times more healthy fat than wheat flour, 5 to 7 times more fiber, naturally gluten-free, zero cholesterol, zero sodium, top 5% of all foods for folate content. And the tree that produces it requires no irrigation, no fertilizer, no pesticides, no annual planting, ever. A food this nutritious, this sustainable, this abundant, growing free on trees across every temperate region on Earth should be in every grocery store. It is not. And the reason is not biology. It is money. The erasure began with identity. Classical Greece and Rome defined civilization around three crops: wheat bread, wine, and olive oil, the Mediterranean triad. To eat bread was to be civilized. To eat acorns was to be something less. Herodotus associated acorn eaters with mythical, pre-civilized Arcadia. The Oracle of Delphi reportedly warned Sparta that those acorn eaters would be impossible to conquer, a grudging acknowledgement disguised as contempt. Strabo called them mountaineers. By the medieval period, acorns had been demoted to pig feed, famine flour, and hermit rations. Historian Andrea Maraschi of the University of Bari documented the shift precisely. He wrote, "Wheat bread was an identity-marking food, and people would still make bread in times of hardship, with inferior grain flours if available, or with anything else that could be ground into powder in case of extreme emergency. Chestnuts, wild grasses, roots, acorns. Last resort." That was the new label for a staple 750,000 years old. Then America turned the label into law. The Homestead Act of 1862 granted 160 acres of public land to any adult citizen who would improve it. Improvement meant one thing: clear the forest, fell the trees, plow the soil, plant grain. Between 1862 and the 1930s, 270 million acres, 10% of all U.S. land, were distributed to 1.6 million homesteaders under this mandate. The Forest Homestead Act of 1906 opened national forests to clearing. The Enlarged Homestead Act of 1909 doubled claims to 320 acres. The Stock Raising Homestead Act of 1916 pushed them to 640. The law did not merely permit deforestation, it required it. To own the land, you had to destroy the forest. In California, the destruction was not just ecological, it was targeted. In 1851, militias actively hunted native people and burned acorn caches and villages to starve and drive them from their land. California's 1850 laws excluded any recognition of acorn gathering rights, rights that Roman law had protected 2,000 years earlier. The pre-contact native population of 300,000 collapsed to a fraction during the Gold Rush era. Boarding schools severed the next generation from their grandmother's knowledge. Children were punished for speaking their languages. The acorn traditions, the leaching, the grinding, the granaries, the forest management were cut at the root. They did not just take the land, they burned the food. One voice tried to sound the alarm. In 1918, C. Hart Merriam, American zoologist and chief of the U.S. Biological Survey, wrote in National Geographic, "In view of the present pressure on the food supply of the United States, it may be worthwhile to call attention to the high nutritive value of a wholly neglected food of wide distribution. I refer to the acorn. That was over a century ago. The acorn is still neglected, and now the money explains why. Corn has received $116.4 billion in federal subsidies since 1995. Wheat, $48.4 billion. Soybeans, $44.9 billion. The 2025 One Big Beautiful Bill Act increases commodity subsidies by another $65.5 billion over 10 years. The eligible crops for federal price support are corn, cotton, peanuts, rice, soybeans, wheat, and minor oilseeds. Perennial food trees are not on the list. In 2022, the USDA awarded roughly $153 million to agroforestry projects, including a flagship $60 million expanding agroforestry grant through the Nature Conservancy. In April 2025, the USDA terminated it. You cannot patent a tree that drops food for free. They subsidize corn at $3.2 billion a year and acorns at $0. They spend $60 billion a year on an industry that includes raking free food off lawns and hauling it to landfills. They sell $57 billion of bread annually, made from grain that costs $416 per acre in seed, fertilizer, pesticides, and machinery, while a tree that produces the same calories for free grows in the park across the street. And when someone finally invested in the trees that could replace all of it, they terminated the funding. And here is the twist that makes the whole system visible. Americans now spend $3.5 billion a year on gluten-free flour alternatives. The market is growing 8 to 10% annually. Acorn flour is naturally gluten-free. It has more fiber, a lower glycemic index, and more healthy fat than any commercial blend on the shelf. It falls off trees. The artisanal price of $25 to $33 per pound reflects hand processing in tiny batches, not inherent material cost. With industrial processing, that price collapses. The raw material is free. It has always been free. But the knowledge did not die. It was carried. Julia Parker was born in February of 1928 in Grattan, California. She is Coast Miwok and Kashaya Pomo. Her Indian name is Hu-wee-na, person of peace. She was orphaned at 5, placed in foster care, and sent to Stewart Indian School near Carson City, Nevada, a federal institution where native ways were actively forbidden. Children were punished for speaking their languages. Cultural practices were treated as contamination to be scrubbed away. She married Ralph Parker, a Mono Lake Paiute, and moved to Yosemite Valley. There, Ralph's grandmother, Lucy Tellis, a master basket weaver whose work now hangs in the Smithsonian, taught Julia the acorn traditions the boarding school had tried to erase. The gathering, the drying, the pounding, the leaching, the cooking with hot stones in watertight baskets. When Lucy Tellis died in 1956, the National Park Service asked Julia to become the cultural demonstrator at Yosemite Museum. She accepted. She has held that role for over 60 years, the longest tenured cultural specialist in the park's history. Her quiet act of resistance. I started to do some of the old ways that the school said not to do. Four generations of Parker women now carry the tradition. Daughter Lucy, granddaughter Ursula, great-granddaughter Naomi. Julia Parker's baskets sit in the Smithsonian and in Queen Elizabeth II's royal collection, gifted during the Queen's 1983 visit to Yosemite. In 2007, she received the National Heritage Fellowship, the highest honor the United States bestows in folk and traditional arts. One woman, 60 years. A tradition. They tried to kill, breathing. She is not alone. In Bowie, Maryland, Lincoln Smith, a trained landscape architect who quit his career at 30 in 2012, operates Forested, a 10-acre experimental forest garden. He collects 1,800 pounds of acorns in a single fall and transforms them into falafel, crostini, pasta, and granola for community forest feasts. He collaborates with Chef Michael Costa, head chef at Jose Andres Zaitinha, for forest-to-table dinners. His question drives everything. Can we actually prove that we can produce the same amount of food per acre as we rely on from wheat? David Cantor founded Folk Revival in 2021, the first national brand to bring wild harvested acorn flour to the American market. A former vice president of marketing at Dr. Prager's, with a master's in nutrition from Tufts, Cantor now sells grain-free acorn hot cereal cups at over 165 Whole Foods stores on the East Coast. On Kia Island in Greece, American expat Marcy Mayer produces roughly 10,000 pounds of acorn flour per year through her Oak Meal Initiative and hosts an annual acorn festival. Her dream is to see an acorn section in every supermarket. She notes that acorns in their shells can store for up to a decade. That storage is critical, she says, for places experiencing famine or conflict. And the pattern repeats. Amaranth was banned by conquistadors. Growers were reportedly punished with severed hands because the Aztecs molded it into sacred effigies the Spanish considered blasphemous. Mezquite is the single most important food of the Sonoran Desert, with roots reaching 160 feet into the earth. Texas spent nearly $50 million on herbicides to clear it for cattle. Tepary beans, cultivated by the Tohono O'odham for 4,000 years, were displaced by mechanized cotton and commercial pinto beans. The O'odham now suffer some of the highest rates of type 2 diabetes in the world, a disease their traditional high-fiber, low-glycemic diet had prevented. Every one of these foods follows the same arc, indigenous perennial staple, colonial disruption, replacement by annual monocultures demanding massive chemical and mechanical inputs, ecological collapse and a health crisis. Then, decades or centuries later, rediscovery. Acorns are not an isolated case. They are the archetype. They will not tell you that acorn oil contains 5 to 6 times more vitamin E than the olive oil they sell for $20 a bottle. They will not tell you that acorn flour's glycemic index is less than half of the wheat flour in every loaf on the shelf. They will not tell you that a single hominin species ate acorns for 100,000 continuous years at one site in Israel, and that we stopped not because the food failed, but because we forgot what the tree was for. They will not tell you that Korea eats 14,000 metric tons of acorns a year while America pays to rake them into the trash. But now you know. Picture the oak in the yard across the street, the one nobody planted, the one that grew anyway, from a single nut, a squirrel buried and forgot, decades before anyone poured the foundation. Every autumn it drops hundreds of pounds of food onto the grass, and every autumn, someone fires up a leaf blower and sweeps it all to the curb. The oak does not lobby. It does not advertise. It does not require annual seed purchases, fertilizer contracts, pesticide applications, or $65 billion in new subsidy guarantees. It drops food, as it has for 750,000 years, and waits. It does not need subsidies. It does not need laboratories. It does not need a patent, a brand, a marketing budget, or a lobbyist. It needs soil, rain, and time. It has always needed only soil, rain, and time. The oldest bread on earth is still falling. The only question is whether you will pick it up. Every like, every share, every subscription preserves what they spent centuries trying to erase. Welcome to Buried Garden,